Holy Toledo, it's Mocha Latte time. Week coming to you from Toledo, Ohio, on let's say a fair Monday morning. Broadcasting to you. Great things coming up. Part two in the B2B series, Bean to Bowl series, and the coffee scenes in Canton, Ohio, Toledo, Ohio, and upcoming events for next week. All coming up. So you're tuning in to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is Circus Boy Nathan Slaywell coming to you from Toledo, Ohio. The circus is my day job, but I have a passion for coffee. And you are listening to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World, where every week, whatever town we're in, I search, ride my motorcycle around and search for the best mocha latte that can be found on planet Earth. So. This morning I am broadcasting from not inside the Flying Dutchman, but actually on top of the Flying Dutchman, believe it or not. I'm sitting up on my roof. We're down in Toledo this week by the Maumee River here at the sports arena, and it's not too early in the morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting here on top of my RV looking out towards the river. I'm looking, I guess it would be north, and I see a few RVs left over that they haven't started to make the jump yet, and so there's a few of us still here. You'll probably hear some of the generators and diesel engines as people are actually, it looks like people are getting ready to pack up now and head out toward towards Lake Placid. But looking out in front of me, there's a river, the Maumee River, and just on the other side, there's a bridge going over there. There's some industrial buildings. It looks like there's a kind of grain silos there for the barges. I've been seeing a couple barges going through a couple times a day. And then there's one big glass looking high-rise building and a couple other business buildings. So the town looks like it's starting to wake up. Traffic's looks like it's starting to get flowing here, but this week we had a split week, and before I get into the coffee scene for this week, I'm going to go right to part two of the Bean to Bowl series. So here it is, part two. Welcome to part two of the Bean to Bowl series. Series where I'm going to start from all the way from how it's harvested and cultivated, a little bit of history, all the way up to what happens after you drink the coffee and how your body deals with it. Last week in part one, we talked about how a little bit about the history. We met Caldy, the goat herd, and his experience in discovering coffee. I had my own theory of how coffee discovered, and then we talked about a little bit of cultivation of the coffee plant, the tree, and how this is going. This week in part two, we're going to talk about how it's harvested, and then go on to roasting, and how it's roasted, the different kinds of roasts, and so forth. So harvesting. What do they do after the bean is the berry is ripened? Well, it's picked, obviously. And there's two methods of drying, basically getting the bean out of the little berry. And there's two methods. The first method is the dry method. Now, in the dry method, it's picked and then dried in the sun for about 1 to 2 weeks. And then the shell is removed by hand or a machine. So basically, it's sun-dried
and that dries the shell and lets you get rid of the stuff on the outside to get to the bean inside. It's green, the green bean. And then the second method is the wet, or also called the wash method. It takes a little bit longer. Sometimes the beans are frozen, but usually they're placed in water to ferment for a small amount of time and to get rid of any residue. Once they've fermented in that water, the shell becomes soft. Then they're placed in the sun to dry, which is when the parchment, which is that outside kind of shell, is eliminated. And then what usually takes place, this usually takes place where the water is plentiful, for the sheer fact that it takes so much water to let the beans ferment. And so that is the wet method. Now, in producing coffee, when it's harvested, an average acre of trees will produce about 10,000 pounds, which for you on the metric system, that's about 4,500 kilos of coffee cherries, which end up being about 2,000 pounds, which is 907 kilos, if you're on the metric system, of coffee beans after hulling and milling. So it's pretty, after everything is said and done, you have about 2,000 pounds or 900 kilos of beans from 1 acre of trees. Now, when they're shipped in, I'm sure you've seen all those burlap bags. That's how the green coffee beans are shipped. And they're shipped in about 135 to 150 pounds. That's roughly 68 kilos sized bags. And this is after they've all been dried, sized, sorted, graded, and selected. And a lot of countries will have their own system of grading. Kind of, it helps, I guess, produce a standard for that country, so that when people go to buy, it makes it more attractive, and just, you know, they know what kind of product they're getting each time, the consistency and quality. So that's the harvesting aspect. Now, once the beans are harvested and they're shipped to the U.S., someone has to roast them before they can be ground and turned into coffee, brewed coffee, or espresso. So let me move on to roasting here. Now, roasting is there's definitely a fine art in this process. Now, what happens when roasting goes on? First off, you have to have quality beans to roast, and then you have the roasting and blending. Now, you're probably asking, you know, Nathan, what happens when a coffee bean is roasted? Well, I'll tell you. When it's roasted, the beans are heated. Actually, not superheated. They're heated to about between 400 and 500 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that's pretty pretty hot. Now, when it gets hot enough, the bean actually pops, or in the industry they call it cracking. And it's kind of like popcorn. If you've ever made popcorn, you know, you hear after a little while, you start hearing the pop, 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 you know, like that. Well, it's the same way for coffee beans. I actually had a really cool opportunity to go down and meet the roastmaster at Carpe Diem Coffee in Mobile, Alabama. I was down there, and I had the treat. He gave me kind of like a mini little lesson and let me watch him go through the roasting process on a batch of beans there, and very interesting. It took about 15 minutes, and got to watch him how he monitored the temperature and watched the texture of the bean and the smell. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. So back to what happens when the beans are actually roasted. So they're in that 400 to 500 degree temperature range. Now they get to that the stage where it pops or cracks. And at that point is where the sugars, also called sucrose, they start to caramelize, and they help create the coffee oil, which is actually not really an oil because it's water soluble, but they help create what they call coffee oil that gives the coffee its aroma, the smell, and its taste. That's what gives the coffee its essence, I guess you could say. Now, this whole process of the heating up the bean and the sugars and oils and stuff, it's the scientific name is pyrolysis, which from my Greek, it looks like the pyro is fire, and at least this is probably a process of, so maybe it's a process of fire, I'm just guessing, but that's probably where it comes from. Now, after a bean is roasted up to that first crack point, there's literally hundreds of chemicals that are released in that bean. It's really that crack is a burst of moisture coming from inside the bean. Now, besides the chemicals in that, when it gets to that point of that first crack, there's it swells actually quite a bit, actually 50% of its original size. It loses a lot of its weight, it loses some protein, and actually loses about 10 to 15% of its caffeine. So those beans that Caldina's goats were dancing off of, they actually had more caffeine than the coffee that we drink and have today. So that's pretty much what happens to a bean. Now it's roasted. I talked about that first crack. Yes, why is it called the first crack? Well, because there's a second crack. And what happens is, once you roast it, that bean is kind of on a path to keep heating up and heating up, to the point where it actually just turns into charcoal and would actually catch on fire and be quite a mess. So it's somewhere between that first and sometimes a little bit beyond that second crack that they take that. Now, in layman's terms, how does that translate into what we find in the store? They don't say, well, here is first crack roasted coffee, and or, you know, here is coffee between the first and second crack. No, they give it names or labels, and some of those labels you'll probably recognize. I'm going to list a few here, just from lightest to darkest. We have the medium high roast, or a light roast, a city roast, a full city roast, a Vienna roast, French roast, which is also sometimes called an Italian roast, or that some people even intermix the Italian with espresso roast. So now you say, you know, where do those fall in the line? It's pretty much just from the little bit of research I've done, those pretty much come right around the full city is right after that first crack, and it's a very fine line. Like when I watched the roast master down at Carpe Diem, he was very careful to watch how quickly he brought the temperature up on the roaster he had there, which was a drum roaster, which I'll talk about in about 2 seconds here, and was also very careful to monitor the heat inside the roaster while it was going on, because if you roast it too quickly, the beans will scorch, and then they don't roast properly and evenly, and then you won't get those coffee oils of flavor. And if you roast it too slowly, with too little heat, the bean will actually never roast and just bake, pretty much. So there really is a fine line that the roaster has to tackle. He even told me that, you know, for himself, he's been doing it for, I believe it was 6 or 7 years, and he said it wasn't until the fourth year of coffee roasting that he really felt he was starting to get a handle on how the beans, because I mean, really all the beans from around the world have different characteristics and roast differently. Like, you know, a bean from Guatemala would roast differently, has different moisture, different flavors, different chemicals that you can bring out, you know, as opposed to say a bean from you know, somewhere in Indonesia, like Sumatra or Java or something like that. So you have your different parts of roast there, the French / Italian being the darkest, and the light or medium high roast being the lightest. Now, as I mentioned, there's two kinds of roasters. You have a drum roaster, drum roasting, or hot air roasting. Now, with the drum roaster, which that's what I've seen most places. That's the big, the big industrial-looking things that you'll see in some coffee shops. So that's a drum roaster, and basically it works. It has a drum, which is a long cylinder inside that basically rotates over a flame of some kind. Most often it's gas. I mean, I don't know anyone that uses wood anymore. So it's it has to have a heat source, and it's usually gas, and it's roasted over that gas, and it turns, and as it turns, the beans tumble inside, and from the temperature, therefore, they are roasted. Now, in the drum roaster, when they're finished, they actually have a door, I don't know the proper name for it, that they open, and all the beans come out into a hopper, and they have this funny-looking arm thing that goes in a circle, and actually it cools the beans off. Now, usually it's done by air. Some places, especially some of the big commercial places, will use water, spray on water to cool more quickly. But there's some debate as to that interfering with the moisture and so forth, messing that up by using sprayed water to cool it down. So usually it comes out and it's air cooled in there. Now the hot air roaster, which is also called fluid bed roasting, the beans actually tumble on a I don't know if you call it a stream or a column of hot air, kind of like the old school popcorn machines. And actually there's a growing population of people that are now home roasting, and it's actually, I was looking around online a little bit, it's actually not too hard to modify a old popcorn machine to roast your own home beans, which I think I might hear in a couple weeks when things slow down a little bit. I think I might delve into that a little bit myself, and I may have to do a podcast on my home roasting extravaganzas, although I hope I don't burn, that's pending not burning anything down, but hey, you never know. So that's the hot air roasting, and that's, I haven't seen in any of the coffee places I've been to, I haven't really seen that around. Now you're probably asking, Nathan, you haven't mentioned blends of different coffees. Well, blends are usually used, the reasoning is each bean from each particular part of the world has its own characteristics and flavor, and you can mix those beans to give a kind of more complex flavor in a cup. It's kind of like mixing spices in a dish or like a soup per se. It gives you a much more complex flavor to what you're enjoying. And now the big question in blending is, do you blend before roasting or after roasting? Well, the consensus so far of what I found in the research is that most people like to blend after roasting. The reason being, each bean, like I said, has its own characteristics and has a certain way that you need to deal with it, to roast it. And so if you're mixing like all, you know, different kinds of beans, there's too many variables that will, you know, you'll end up with basically a nice variety of beans, but none of them will be roasted quite to their full potential. So a lot of roasters like to take individual beans, roast them to their potential where they want them, and then mix those together afterwards. Blending is actually very popular for espresso blends, usually there's anywhere from about 3 to 7 different types of beans in some espresso blends. Now in the U.S., usually with blends, they use 100% Arabica beans, which I mentioned before, because remember from last week, there's two types of beans, Arabica and Robusta, Arabica being the diva, of course, out of the two beans. But some places in the world, like Italy, use some Robusta beans to enhance the crema, which that's espresso speak for that nice, really brown, kind of brown foam that comes on a good espresso. So it's used to enhance the crema and also the overall flavor of the espresso drink. So it's a little bit on blends. You'll definitely see blends for, you know, regular brew coffee as well. Now you're probably asking, well, if there's blends, what about the flavor coffees? You haven't mentioned flavored or decaffeinated. Well, flavored coffees are basically, it's not any special kind of bean, like they don't mix together an orange tree and a bean tree or a coffee tree or like a vanilla tree and coffee tree to come up with like a vanilla bean French roast coffee. No, it's the way it's done is they take a regular coffee after roasting it, then they put syrups, flavored syrups in it, kind of like the syrups that are available in your coffee after it's brewed. You can also add syrups at that point. So some people do. Now there's debate as to whether putting syrups on the actual bean affect the way it's ground and the way it's brewed, you know, messing with the brewing process and so forth. But I forget what percentage of the market flavored coffees are, but they're quite a large percentage of the market being the flavored beans that you can buy. So that's the flavored coffee side of things. Now, decaffeinated coffee. The first one I thought about decaffeinated coffee is like, you know, is there actually a decaffeinated coffee bean? Well, what they do is remove the caffeine, and there's two ways that they do this. There's a chemical process where they soak the beans in a chemical and let sit there for a while, and that chemical draws out the caffeine out of the bean, and then they rinse it off and all that, and that's the decaffeinated coffee that you get. Now it's a quicker process, but it does involve chemicals. The second process is called the Swiss water process, and this is all, I guess you could say, all natural. It's no chemicals involved, and what they do in the Swiss water process is they have what they call a coffee charged solution, if you go to their website, the flavor charged solution, and basically it's water that's been super saturated with the coffee flavor, with the caffeine removed. And what they do is place the green coffee beans, this is pre-roasting now, before it's roasted, they place the coffee beans in this water, and since it has the coffee flavors in it, the water can pass interchangeably within the structure of the bean, the cells of the bean. It's kind of like, basically like a coffee brine, if you're familiar with brining food, where it's a salt solution that allows the fluids to interchange between the meat and the water. Well, it's the same thing with the coffee. It allows the water to go in and out of the cell structure, I guess, there in the coffee, and in that process it draws some of the caffeine out into the water. And what happens is they have carbon filters that filter out this caffeine that's in the water, and they repeat this process a couple times, and it takes about 8 hours. But by the time they're finished, you have a coffee bean then I believe it's like 99.7% caffeine free, and there's no chemicals used. So that's the Swiss water method. So those are the two types of decaffeinated coffee. Generally, decaffeinated coffee is more expensive for the reason that there is processing involved to take the caffeine out, and the Swiss water process is also more expensive yet in the decaffeinated coffees because of the process I just described to you. It's a little more time intensive, but it is a natural method that takes the caffeine out. So there you have it. That's pretty much the roasting end of things and the roast. Now, when you get beans from a roaster, whole beans, they usually come in some kind of sealed package. Now the packaging usually is a kind of, it looks like a foil packaging, and it serves this purpose. There's I have listed here four things that are bad for beans. Those four things are air, heat, light, and moisture. All four of those things will make a bean degrade and take away its flavor. So the packaging is designed to fight that. And usually you'll see a little vent on the packaging when you buy it in a store, and that is it's actually a one-way valve, I guess you could say, that lets air out but doesn't let any air in. So it lets air and gases out, because really after they roast beans, the beans should settle for at least a day or two to let the gases get out and the chemicals settle before you can use them. And so that's why that valve's there, to let some of those gases out. As I said, deterioration equals less flavor. Now, there's a big debate on, you know, how long can I keep my coffee beans, and can I keep them in the refrigerator and freezer? Well, they say you can, as long as your coffee beans are sealed and in a cool, dry, dark, and quiet, no, not really quiet, but an airtight place. They can last for about 7 to 10 days. It's best to use them right away, but they can last 7 to 10 days. I usually, when I get my fresh coffee beans, I use like one of those, I don't know, call them those Ziploc containers, those reusable containers, and that are plastic, you know, you can put the lid on. And I put them in there and take them out of the bag right away and put them in there and keep them in the cool place in the cupboard where it's dark. Now, the refrigerator or freezer, well, some places say, you know, that you can put them in the freezer and store them. I forget, I think it's like up to 2 or 3 months, but that's if you don't touch them. They sit there, you're not opening the thing and taking some out and putting them back. They just sit there, and you strictly store them. Now, with the refrigerator, like I said, there's a debate. I would say no, for the reasons that, you know, it does absorb flavors and moisture. Everything in the refrigerator, you know, kind of absorbs flavor and moisture. And you're opening the refrigerator door all the time. And if you're going to open the beans, you know, like when you take a cold glass out of the refrigerator, it has that condensation from the, you know, the cold, the warm air condensating on the cold glass or plastic. Well, the same thing happens with the coffee beans. If you say you have a pound of coffee beans, and you know, once or twice a day you're taking that out of the refrigerator to get a scoop or two to put in the grinder, during that time that condensation is collecting on there, and even when you put the lid back on, you put it back in the refrigerator, you're adding that moisture to your beans, so you're actually doing more harm to the bean. Now, as far as the coldness affecting the taste of the bean, I really don't know, to tell you the truth, but I just try to keep them in a, you know, cool, like in the cupboard, basically like wine, the way you would store wine. It's the same way for coffee beans. It's the same type of thing. So so yeah, ixnay on the refrigerator ray on there. So that is part two of the Bean to Bowl series. I know that went on for a little bit. Next week we're going to get on to the fun part, which is the grinding and brewing of the coffee, whole coffee experience. So next week I'm going to talk a little bit about grinders, and because I actually have one on the way that I'm excited, so maybe we can run that through its paces on the podcast next week, and talk a little bit about brewing. I don't think we're actually going to get into brewing, but just scratch the surface of it in part three, and then part four will be the actual brewing, and of course the drinking process. So till then, this has been
and we're back here to Toledo. So this week in the coffee scene, I'm going to start, actually hit one place up near Louisville, and then I got a couple places in Canton and a couple places here in Toledo, in the Louisville. And what the bean scene is, every week I ride my motorcycle around and check out the local coffee places and kind of see what the cafe scene is in that town. So Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is right across the river from Louisville, there's a place called, well, it says DBL Shots Espresso Bar, so basically Double Shots Espresso Bar, and it's a pretty cool place. I actually bought some beans there, and I know, on a side note, I know I usually brew espresso while I'm doing this segment of the podcast, but unfortunately, I haven't figured out how to brew espresso on top of an RV yet. So as soon as I figure that out, then I will. I mean, who podcasts from the top of their RV anyways? I don't know. But as soon as I figure that out, maybe I'll have to save that for down the line. But anyhow, so yes, Double Shots Espresso Bar. The review is a decent drink. Foam was a little bit on the loose side. Served out of to-go cup. They did ask on the whipped cream. But I wasn't a big fan of the chocolate in this drink, and so the espresso could have been a little more present. So overall, it wasn't terrible, but I gave it 3.6. Now, moving on, we had a split week this week, which I said before, in circus talk, means that we'd play two towns in 1 week, and it's been quite the exhausting week, actually. I had some troubles with the RV that I had to fix en route, but hey, that's part of circus life, I guess. So the first place in Canton, Ohio is Carpe Diem. Now, this is a cool little coffee shop right in downtown in Canton. If you go into Canton, they have a kind of a cool little downtown that they've been trying to, it looks like they've been trying to fix up there, and kind of right near a town square, I guess if you could call it that, is a little place inside a building called Carpe Diem, and it has a cozy atmosphere. They definitely put a lot of thought into the interior decorating for it. It's kind of more of what I would say would be a business, kind of like a business crowd. They do, you know, kind of like the 7 to 3, 7 to 4 hours in the morning, and kind of cater to the business crowd. But I had their, I think it was butternut squash soup. It's very good, very good. But this is a mocha latte broadcast, so, or podcast rather. So their mocha latte was a typical sweet chocolate drink. It was a little chocolate heavy. They had auto whipped cream, which I have a little frown there. Not much espresso taste. Could have used a little more milk, and it was served out of a to-go cup. So their drink was a 3.3 for the week. Next up in Canton was Mugwick's, a coffee and tea. Now, I was delightfully surprised about this place. This is definitely, Canton's it's right on the smaller side of, I'd say a town or city maybe, on the smaller side. And, you know, I wasn't really expecting to find too much coffee there as well as coffee shops, but Mugwick's Coffee and Tea, they're definitely going against the grind, pardon the pun there, in Canton. They are located downtown also, only a few blocks away from Carpe Diem, and they actually roast their own beans and have a lot of cool stuff for people who want to learn more about coffee. Like every day, they have a little board there, they put coffee facts up every day. They have, I don't know, well, like I said, they roast their own beans, and they have a pretty nice tea selection if you're into tea. Yeah, you can buy lots of, you know, press pot coffee stuff and so forth. So they got, what? Oh, he's waving. And so yeah, they and as it turns out, I think that the top barista in Ohio is from works at Mugwick's. I think she competed in the North, I think in the Northeast or the North Central Barista Championships, and she happens to work there. So she wasn't working, unfortunately, the day that I was there, so I hope to revisit the place and get a mocha latte under her skill. But anyhow, the mocha latte I had there was, well, I wrote here I had high expectation for this place, but it was served without a whipped cream. It was a big disappointment. But they did ask on the to-go cup. And the chocolate was too heavy, and it actually had a faint taste of cinnamon. Only one other place in the country does this, actually. And had a nice espresso taste, so it's just unbalanced. It was a little bit disappointing. I gave him a 3.8. So the auto whipped cream was definitely a letdown for a place of that caliber. But I would definitely try it. It seems that they're doing good things with coffee. Very cool atmosphere. Very laid back. It looks like they have live music there. So I'd say check it out if you get the chance to go there. And their mocha latte was unique in that it had cinnamon in it, which traditionally back in the Inca times, chocolate did have cinnamon in it. But anyhow, so yeah, I would recommend checking that place out, Mugwick's in Canton, Ohio. Next up is Sylvania, Ohio. Now Sylvania is right outside of Toledo. Oh my goodness, hear that tractor sound in the background? That's we're here since we're along the river. We're by this place that works on boats, and it's this big tractor looking thing carrying a boat. That's just weird. So, oh, anyhow. okay, so back to Sevigny, Ohio. That's right outside of Toledo, Ohio. It's just northwest of here. I took a bike ride on this place, and I found Nautica Coffee Company. Nothing exciting here. I wrote not too much foam, and foam present was loose. Kind of water with too much chocolate. Subpar chocolate at that. So not really much espresso taste. Served auto to go cup, but they did ask on whipped cream. So I gave them a 2.9 on them. It's a little place, kind of a little coffee shop, very cozy atmosphere in a little place called Mayberry Square. So if you want to say you drank coffee in Mayberry, well, you can go check this place out. It's kind of like a rural little community there, kind of, I'd say, a suburb of Toledo. So next up in Toledo, Ohio, I got two places, and one place is Downtown Latte, which, as the name suggests, is downtown. And I wrote here they had a nice presentation, served in-house cup, Askin whipped cream, very decent foam. They used 1883 chocolate, which I'm not a fan of that syrup, in their milk, and the bean taste was okay. Well, maybe a little bit better bean taste on there, but overall it was decent drink served in-house cup. And yeah, they did a pretty good job on this drink. Actually, to their credit, they made a regular latte first and forgot to make it a mocha, and when I took it back up there, they had no problem with making a new drink. So it was really cool, very cool about that. So cool place. They actually have live music, they're working at the live music scene there in downtown Toledo on the weekends. So yeah, decent food too. I had their chili and panini combo. It's good. So that is Downtown Latte. And the only other place in Toledo was the Navy Bean Company, which I was kind of was excited when there was a place right across the road, but it turns out that it's a Starbucks, a Starbucks franchise. And I wrote here, well, Starbucks franchises seem to be second-rate Starbucks, which was true. This drink was all milk, hardly any espresso taste, very faint, hint of chocolate, served auto to go cup, didn't ask on whipped cream. I wrote in here, nicht du gut, yuck. Yeah, it was not good. So yeah, so that was Starbucks. Turned out to be a Starbucks franchise. I was kind of let down on Saturday morning, but anyhow. So those are places this week. I know it wasn't a whole lot of places, but it was kind of a crazy week between the split week and fixing. I had to fix, believe it or not, my septic tank, which they call black water on RVs, if you're familiar with the RVing thing. And my valve broke on my septic tank, and I had to find some place where I could dump it and then put the new one on, and yada yada yada. So about 4 in the morning on early Friday morning, I got it fixed after driving for half the day. But I digress. It's always an adventure. So I'll try to be more vigilant in coming weeks and getting more coffee places. So coming up and next week is Lake Placid, New York, which I'm looking forward to. I already looked ahead, and they don't have too much coffee there, but I'm looking forward on getting caught up on the blog, which actually, if you go to bestmochalatte.blogspot.com, you can find my bean rating system, and I'm working on getting all the reviews that I read on here put up on there. And actually, the bean to bowel series that you heard, also I'm going to work on getting the notes up there, kind of as a little bit of a reference for anybody who is interested in reading that, putting that up there. So next week, Lake Placid, and then the following week we are going to be in Portland, Maine, which I'm looking forward to going to visit Javanette and some of my fellow podcasters up there, Kate and Matt at Javanette. So, yes, next week is Portland, Maine. And yeah, so that about wraps it up this week. Sorry, a little late on getting the podcast out, but kind of a crazy week. Next week will be more on time, I promise. And yeah, I'm gonna leave you with some music from my dog. He calls this "Honey, Where's the Map?" from Mod Duck. So a little more off the beaten path. No pun intended from usual. And until next week, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.
Da da da.